Coffee House Shots is sponsored by EDF, Britain's biggest generator of zero carbon electricity. Find out how we are busy helping Britain achieve net zero at www.edfenergy.com.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots from Labour Conference. It's Sunday and I'm joined by Stephen Bush and Isabel Hardman. Now, Labour Conference kicked off on Saturday and Keir Starmer's been trying to push through several rule changes. What's the status of that, Isabel?
It hasn't gone that well, I think is the best way of putting it. He wanted to switch from one member, one vote to an electoral college system, largely to prevent similar scenes as we saw in 2015 when Jeremy Corbyn was elected. He hasn't been able to do that, so he's come up with a diluted package of reforms in terms of sort of thresholds for nominations and so on that he's had to put to a vote in the conference hall instead, because the NEC basically blocked what he was trying to do. And his aides were briefing going into this that it was going to be tight. It turns out that it was tighter than they'd hoped.
And Stephen, when it comes to that vote, which will be later today, is there a sense that this is going to be an easy win for Keir Starmer, or is it actually looking quite tight?
It is actually, I mean, it is genuinely fairly tight, in that essentially half of the votes are controlled by trade union election delegates, half are CLP delegates. Essentially, it's all going to come down to whether or not Unison, well, they're currently formally instructed to abstain. Can the Labour leadership negotiate them into support? Can they peel off enough individual delegates? But it's going to be very, very close whether or not they can get that big package of rule reforms through.
But Isabel, I don't know if this is a blessing in disguise, but ultimately, when it comes to what people are talking about here in Brighton, it's not rule changes and Keir Starmer's having to change and dilute his plans. It's his deputy, Angela Rayner. On Saturday night, she addressed a reception and she made some comments about Tory scum. Can you talk us through the thrust of what she was saying and the reaction?
Yeah, she was basically saying that this is an old Etonian Tory scum government, and she has now refused to apologise for that until Boris Johnson apologises for the things that he said, particularly his racism, which is a sort of awkward charge, I think, coming from the Labour Party, which this week is having to deal with the ruling from the Equalities and Human Rights Commission on its own anti-Semitism problem. I'm not sure it's necessarily the right thing, but that aside, what it has done, not necessarily as a favour to Keir Starmer, is taken the attention away from this vote and the shenanigans with the unions and the left of the Labour Party, as you say, and onto Angela Rayner. And quite a few people who I've been speaking to this morning, you know, aides, advisers, MPs and so on, are saying that that this is very much all about Angela, and that there's been quite a focus from Labour's deputy leader on Labour's deputy leader and on who she is, what she stands for, and the difference between her and Keir Starmer. And she identified this very smartly in her interview that she did with The Times yesterday, where she talked about how she felt that Keir Starmer had started out from a working class background like her, but that he'd had a lot of his sort of individuality and passion squeezed out of him by being a lawyer. And you can see the difference between, you know, primary colour painting Angela Rayner, who calls Tories scum, and cautious essay writing Keir Starmer, who has neither condemned nor supported comments after being asked about them today. He's just said that he's going to talk to her about them and they're not the words that he would use, which, as you've written on Coffee House, Katie, is hardly the mark of a passionate and authoritative leader.
Stephen, do you think calling Tories scum is a vote winner?
I mean, no, I think, yeah, it's a bit of a distraction, really, right? Like, ultimately, anyone who agrees with it is already voting against the Conservative Party. I think part of the weird problem, though, is the Labour Party is essentially divided between MPs who agree with her and MPs who agree with her but think she shouldn't have said it, which is one of the reasons why you end up with this deeply awkward kind of theatre of the awkward with, yeah, okay, going, oh, it's not the words I would have chosen, which, I mean, essentially concedes and he agrees. But, yeah, it's not a great position for them to be in, although in an odd way, right, the biggest asset they have here is what's going on in the energy markets, in the, no, more so than usual, this is going to be a Labour Party conference where the opposition party really struggles to get any attention from outside, and I suspect they'll be quite grateful for that.
And Isabel, I suppose when we're looking at what Keir Starmer wants to get from this conference, He is trying to pick a party with the left of his party. He may not win it. But we also saw in an interview of Andrew Marr how he was talking about how he had to get this fight done because he had to do that in order to be able to spend the next 12 months taking the fight to the country. Do you get the sense that Labour MPs agree with him, that people think we are on a brink of a shift in gear coming from the Labour leadership?
I think it's more that Labour MPs hope that there's going to be a shift in gear from the leadership in the coming days. Look, it depends who you talk to in the party as to whether they think that this rule change was something that he should have been going for now, or whether it's, in the words of one who I spoke to, torpedoed conference and made it look like it's fighting even more with itself than it was already. But I think that the clear message from all Labour MPs is that Labour needs a clear message, and it doesn't have one at the moment. And no matter how united or otherwise the party is, it doesn't actually have anything to say to the general public other than really, you know, Keir Starmer's ongoing riff of they should have planned for this better, which is what he says about pretty much everything that's happened in politics over the past few years.
And Stephen, you mentioned the fact there are shortages now which are dominating the news. Keir Starmer clearly made a call today in relation with that. But when it comes to, I suppose, the format of this conference, are there areas we're going to see more policy come out? Rachel Reeves has given an interview in which she talked about how she would not want to raise income tax. We then had Keir Starmer on the Andrew Marr show saying, well, she would not want to currently raise income tax, which seemed to soften it a little bit, at least. Is that something the party's trying to gain some traction on?
I think, to be honest, on tax, you simply have the underlying problem that Rachel has a very clear set of principles and views about how you go about winning credibility, and Keir Starmer is a relative neophyte who does not have as clear a sense of like what he wants his economic position to be, rather than that speaks to a wider strategy about them winning the argument on tax and spend. And I think the weird thing is we've already had loads of policy announcements from this party this week, last week, all the time, but what they continue to lack is any sense of what these policy announcements are actually about, right? They have had loads of announcements, but no real statements of principle. And without statements of principle, yeah, you just end up with kind of like, oh, here's like a bunch of left and centre stuff, and basically any Lib Dem MP, any Labour MP would agree with. And so you kind of end up with, you know, a lot of content, but no flavour.
Yes, but are we at least getting a sense that Keir Starmer, now he is trying to define Starmerism as moving to the centre? Because we had the essay last week, 12,000 words, that was read in some quarters as a move to the middle ground. We also had Keir Starmer talking about energy companies this morning. He said he did not want to nationalise the Big Six. Yet if you look at what he said during the leadership, he was actually suggesting that was something he might do. So is this a tactical shift?
Oh, I'm not sure, because we've also today had an announcement that Labour would end the charitable status of private schools in order to fund better resources for children to catch up on their education from the pandemic and other things like that. And to me, that seems like even more of a shift than Ed Miliband ever took the party on education and private schools, while also being a tremendous comfort zone policy from the Labour Party. I mean, how many conferences have we been to, all of us, where there has been some kind of debate about whether private schools are good or bad or not? And, you know, Labour delegates saying, oh, you know, the only people who stand up for this are very rich people because you can't afford private schools otherwise, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, the next day you get someone saying they love the NHS and everyone being like, great. And then the following day it's, oh, we're not going to talk to mean people in foreign policy. And then they all go home. I mean, you can sort of predict the course of a Labour conference on those sort of three things, and no one will be challenged and voters won't pay any attention because it's the background noise that you know we all filter out as political journalists, let alone voters.
And finally, Stephen, the other big event in Brighton is the World Transformed Festival, which has become the home of the Corbynites, the left of the party. Is that where we're going to see those on the left who are the most unhappy with Keir Starmer's leadership letting rip in the evenings?
Yeah, that will be the place, yeah. And we've already seen, you know, Glenn McCloskey saying he's going to lose. That will be the place where any journalist who wants to find an embarrassing quote about the Labour leadership is not going to struggle to find it there. It kind of will depend, yeah, what happens on the conference floor later, what direction those embarrassing quotes are in. Is it a kind of, he's done this awful thing, or we've defeated him doing this awful thing? But yeah, I mean, the interesting thing is that the existence of essentially two parallel conferences means that the Labour Party avoids lots of stories about a horrendous atmosphere, you know, people staring daggers at each other and nothing. But it does also mean that if you want to find a critical story about the Labour Party, You don't even have to work very hard anymore. It's a great labour-saving device for lots of us in the press.
Thank you, Stephen. Thank you, Isabel. And thank you for listening.